Welcome to this episode of Out of the Best Books, the podcast where we deep dive into classic literature and have conversations about what we've learned and discovered along the way. We love all things books and reading, and we want to share our love of the classics with you. We hope to inspire you to read along with us and join in the conversation. I'm Amity.
And I'm Laura. Let's get started. All right. We're excited today to start The Wheel on the School by
Meinert de Jong. As far as so we're going to do the best that we can with our pronunciations. We do not speak Dutch, but we've tried to research it a little bit. And years ago, when I first read this to my kids, I was like, I want to make sure I'm saying the names right. So I had looked it up. So I think I have them right, but at least according to the internet, there's sometimes a few different ways that you can pronounce some of these names. So we're taking at least one of them. And if we get it totally wrong, I'm sorry. We are really doing the best that we can. So.
Yes, if you speak Dutch, we apologize.
Yes. Good stuff, though. By way of introduction, this book, The Wheel on the School, is something that I was introduced to years and years ago when I was just a little girl being homeschooled. And we would do dictation sometimes. This was something that has like always stuck in my head, and I was always very curious about the book behind it, because the dictation was this paragraph from, I believe, the very first chapter, where it says, "Everybody laughed, but the teacher's eyes were not pleased. 'True, true,' he said. 'That's right, Ielka. We can't think much when we don't know much, but we can wonder.'" And so for some reason, that has stuck in my head for years and years. And we never actually read the book. But I would, like I said, I was always very curious about it. So when I had my own children, I was like, I really wanted to actually read The Wheel on the School. I have this paragraph in my mind. I'd love some context, you know? And so I got it and I read it to my kids and I was like, oh my gosh, this book is so just delightful. It is beautiful. It is good. It is, it's culture and it's community, and it's just so wonderful. So
did you just recite that paragraph like from
I did
when you were a child?
I'm serious, like I don't know, it's always stuck in my mind. I don't even know why. It's just been there for, how old am I now? 30 years. Anyways,
and second thing, I didn't know you were homeschooled. Were you really?
Oh yeah, I was homeschooled until seventh grade. So, and this is like the dark ages of homeschooling, when it like barely became legal in the United States. Well, I mean, it was, you know, it had been legal for a few years. So we were the weirdies, you know, like we were the very stigmatized homeschoolers. It's gotten so much better over time, but definitely.
We just learned a lot about you.
Yeah. And my mom got a lot of harassment for it, for sure. It's crazy. I mean, a lot of moms nowadays will be like, oh, I hate it when people ask me these questions and these questions. She had people being very aggressive towards her and her decision to homeschool.
Kind of reminds me of like having a lot of kids.
Oh,
when you show up at the grocery store and you have this like passel of children with you, and you're, people are just rude sometimes.
Oh, yeah. And actually, like, you don't expect it as much in Utah because like everybody has huge families, right? But I was like at Walmart the other day here in Utah, and I actually only had like three of my kids with me. They were just right there with me and no problems. But this older man walks by with his cart full of dog food, and he's like, "Don't you think you need a few more kids?" And I was like, "Well, actually, yes, I would love some more." What in the world?
Like, good, just half of them.
I know. So Meinert de Jong, he was born in 1906, and he was actually born in the Netherlands. So he was born in Friesland in the Netherlands. He and his family emigrated to America in, I think it was 1914. So they evidently went to Michigan, because he attended schools in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and then he went to the University of Chicago. During the Depression, he began writing. He had a variety of jobs, and then he began writing during that point. He did serve during World War II, and he served in China for the U.S. Army Air Corps. And then after the war, he started writing again. And he has received the Hans Christian Andersen Award for his lasting contribution to literature for young people. And this is sort of like a worldwide award. And the Wheel on the School, the one we're going to talk about, won the U.S. Newbery Medal in 1955. And like all of his books earned one award or another. And then just kind of a fun side note, the Wheel on the School and several of his books actually were illustrated by Maurice Sendak, who is the author of Where the Wild Things Are, author and illustrator of Where the Wild Things Are. And he's illustrated quite a few things. Kind of fun, very cool. And I would love to know a lot more about him. That's a very, very brief. He had to have been a very decent and good and kind man. I just don't think you can get good stuff from a bad person, you know, and this is just such a good book.
So I had no idea what was going to come. You know what I mean? What this was about. I had no idea. So it's been that I really like his writing. I really think it's just sweet and like fun. Sometimes it's funny. Anyways, just so far it's been delightful. And everybody probably knows I don't read ahead. So I've only read where we're going to stop today. But Amity has a clear picture of what's happening. The book is set in the fishing village of Shora in Holland. I just love how he wrote this beginning that there's 5 school age children in the village.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? Like there's 5 kids and only one of them is a girl. So that poor girl. But Yella, and I made little notes about each of them, who is the biggest. And then Aoka, who is
Aoka.
Smart.
Yeah.
Yep. He is Aoka, who is smart, but big and slow. And so he often gets left out. Aoka, who is nice, but regular. I also like that. Like, he's regular. There's nothing.
just normal. Nothing that stands out. Poor guy.
Pierre and Dirk, who are twins, and then Lena, who is the only girl. And the twins are funny because they like basically can't do anything without each other. And if one of them thinks something, the other one thinks it. And in the first chapter, Lena writes a story about storks. And I mean, it's just kind of funny because it's like, okay, so this whole book is about storks wanting to get storks to come to Shora because they don't have them. So she writes this story about storks and how they don't have them in Shora. And in the middle of arithmetic, the teacher lets her read this essay because he's so impressed that she wrote it on her own without being, it wasn't an assignment. So she just written it. So the essay mentions that the storks bring good luck and that they build great big messy nests. And sometimes they build them on a roof. They also make a clapping noise with their bills that almost all the time, which is kind of interesting that they would want them on their roofs because they make all these noises, but they say it's a happy noise. It's a happy sound. So I don't know. I'm trying to like imagine it.
It says they clap their bills.
Yeah. And it's
so
a
it's just like happy, happy clapping. Like, I don't know.
You know that song years ago, like I can make your hands clap.
There you go.
And then it's like, Presley the other day, it was came on the like Spotify and she was like, I don't like this song. And I was like, it's such a happy song.
It's a happy song. It's so catchy.
Clap your hands. So she can be very difficult. The last thing she writes about in her essay is that her aunt in the village of Ness has 2 storks that build a nest on her roof every year. And so the teacher then asks all the students, what do you guys know about storks? This is the humorous part. Yella says, well, I can't take them down with my slingshot. The teacher's like, why would you take him down? Why would you try to take him down? He's like, well, because they move.
Which, so it's something that I just really love about De Jong is he obviously has such a grasp on kids and just on humans in general and just their quirkiness and just their cute. Because I think that's why I love it so much is it's so real. I feel like it's just really real.
I asked my husband, is that how boys think? He's like, yeah, if they move, we want to shoot it. The twins don't know anything about them. Aoka wants to know more because of their happy noises. And Aoka says that if they came to Shora, then he would like to know more. Then the teacher just says to them at the end, but now what do you think would happen if we all began to think a lot about storks? School's almost out for today, but if from now until tomorrow morning, when you come back to school, you thought and thought about storks, do you think things would begin to happen? They all sat still and thought that over. Aoka raised his hand, but I'm afraid I can't think much about storks when I don't know much about storks. I'd be through in a minute. And then when everyone laughs at Aoka, the teacher says, true, true. We can't think much when we don't know much, but we can wonder. For sometimes when we wonder, we can make things begin to happen. So I was kind of thinking about our podcast and like things like that. Like, I don't know, when we first wanted to start it, we had no idea how to do a podcast. And we're like, that sounds like fun and other people are doing it. And we kind of figured it out. And now like my niece wants to start one. And I'm like, well, I can tell you how to do it very easily because it's not hard.
But. Yeah. And everything starts with an idea and that idea grows and then you start acting on the idea. And we see that progression throughout this book. To me, there's a lot of wonderful themes in this book, but that is one of them, is like setting a goal. You think about it and then you begin acting on it. He really outlines every step of goal setting and goal achieving throughout this entire thing. But right here, we're just in the wonder and think stage. Because it does need to be a practical goal. It needs to be something that is achievable. It's also sort of like entrepreneurial, right? It's like, what is the problem and how can we solve the problem?
I thought about like buying a house, you know, when you're young, and the idea of buying a house just sounds so out of your range of possibilities, you know? And then when you start thinking about it and you kind of think, okay, we need to do this and we need to do this. And eventually it happens. And you almost have to believe that you can do it. And then you can think about how you're going to make it happen. And so that's what I loved about this so far, is that that's what they're doing. They're like, well, okay, you don't know much about them, but let's just wonder.
Let's begin by wondering.
Yes, yeah. I love it. In chapter two, so the teachers talks about letting them out an hour early. They all sit in a line and wonder about storks. And Yella decides that they could go ditch jumping while they think. He's like, why do we have to sit here? And, you know, we could be doing something fun. And I believe ditch jumping, they have a pole that they,
it's
like.
It's just a pole that, as far as I know. But yes, I know what you're talking about. Yeah. It's like a vaulting pole.
Like a high jump pole or whatever. Mm-hmm. Is that what you do?
Pole vault.
Pole vault. So they like use the pole to get themselves over the ditch. Mm-hmm. And what is it, Ailka, that is always ending up in the middle of the ditch? Yeah. He never quite makes it over the.
Yeah.
That is something that will help him. So even he is invited, which means that Lena is alone. And she says that she often gets left out because she's the only girl. And she says, I'm not playing with Ailka for 10 days after this. Like, this is not okay with her. He must get left with her a lot.
That's kind of what makes me think, because it keeps saying he's very fat and slow and clumsy, but he is very smart, like you said.
And is he the one that's very strong?
Later, we're going to find he definitely has many virtues. Yep.
So as the boys run off, Yella says, do not tell the teacher. And so Lena decides to sit and wonder hard. She sees a goal and takes off her wooden shoe to stare into it, which a wooden shoe sounds awful heavy.
Doesn't it? I know.
How do you run or walk? I don't know. And staring into her shoe makes her feel better, which is also quite funny. And kids are funny. So she slowly walks through the streets, looking at all the roofs, wondering, when she realizes that the school's roof is the sharpest of all the roofs. In the distance, she can see the boys out ditch jumping, which I wrote, that sounds dangerous to me.
I know.
I don't think I realized till later in the chapter that they were using sticks. I didn't know what they were doing. But it's then that she figures out why the storks don't come to Shora. It's because their roofs are too sharp. And then she figures out the solution. We need to put a wheel on the top of one of the roofs. So she decides that she's going to go tell the teacher all of this in the morning. And she kind of says, you know, of course, I'm going to go home and tell my mom, but I really want to go tell somebody else because my mom's going to find out anyways. And she keeps walking back to the village. She's looking for somebody to tell. She's staring at this house, which happens to be Grandmother Sybil the Third's house. And this old lady comes out, and she had seen Lena wandering around like a lost sheep, it said. And she was curious about what she was doing. And so she's like, why are you wandering around? And she's like, I'm not wandering. I was wondering. And Lena had never talked to Grandmother Sybil before. She wasn't actually her grandmother. She's just an old lady that lives in the village. The only thing she'd ever talked to her before, she just said hello. So they talk about Lena holding her wooden shoe, which seems strange to me. Just stare into her shoe. And Grandmother Sybil the Third says that she likes to suck on a piece of candy and rock herself on the porch. And that's how she likes to think, just like Lena stares into her shoe. They talk about why she's wondering and how she'd figured out why there are no storks in their town. She says that when she was a little girl, Grandmother Sybil the Third was also the only girl in the village. And at that time, there were storks on her grandmother's house, which is actually where the school is now. But her grandmother had trees all around her house at one time and when the storks were there. But then a real storm, that was funny that they called it a real storm, had come through and the trees had died. At this point, Grandmother Sybil sends her into the house to get some candy, what they call wine balls, which sounds kind of funny to me. The candy is in a tin that has a picture of a town on it with storks. It says pictures of storks in high sweeping trees. And on the lid was a village. And on every house, there was a huge ramshackle stork nest. So in every nest, tall storks stood as though making happy noises with their bills up to a happy blue sky. And so she's so distracted by this picture on this tin, she forgot to get the candy. So she runs back out to talk to Grandmother Sybil, and she realizes that she forgot it. So she goes back in to get it. Afterwards, she walks home wondering again, dreaming about the storks this time. And she realizes the real wonder was that, just as the teacher had said, things had begun to happen. And this is just the very beginning. Mm-hmm. Begin to wonder why, the teacher had said, and maybe things will begin to happen. And they had. For there sat Grandmother Sybil III on the stoop of her little house, and suddenly she had become important. She wasn't just an old person anymore. Miles of years away, she was a friend like another girl who also wondered about storks. So cute.
Yes. I loved it. So sweet. Exactly. And I just wanted to bring up, and you alluded to it as well, just in the very first paragraph of the book, it says, you know, there's very few houses in Shore. In five of those houses, there's six school children. There were a few more houses, but in those houses lived no children, just old people. They were, well, just old people. So they weren't too important. He's going to take that theory and flop it completely on its head. So you have to be prepared to change your mind throughout this book. And he brings the generations together and shows how every generation is important on its own and to each other. We need each other. The younger generation needs the older generation. Older generation needs the younger generation. None of the goals in this book are accomplished without the teamwork of all. And so it's really very beautiful.
And it's just interesting how this one like problem, question they have, goal they have is like prompting them to find out about other people. I love it.
Yeah. Who knew? And it's not just about storks. It really is about community and bringing people together and learning about each other. So chapters 3 and 4, the next day at school, which is evidently Saturday, because I did used to go to school on Saturday, which yuck. They all come back to sort of report how their ponderings went. Lena is quite incensed because the boys all raise their hand and act like they have spent time pondering. She's like, no, they didn't. They were ditch jumping. So the teacher asks Yella first. Yella is like, at least he's very honest. He's like, well, I didn't think about it, but I did ask my mom. And basically my mom says that the storks don't come to shore because they just never did. Lena is just dying with all the information she got because she's like, I really did the assignment. I really did. In a little way, she kind of reminds me of Hermione Granger in Harry Potter. She's like kind of teacher's pet. She did do the work. Good for her. So much the better. But she's anxious to share what she knows. And so she talks about Grandmother Sybil III. She's like, the storks did used to come here. They just haven't in a long time. But Grandmother Sybil remembers them. They talk about how, you know, there's a big problem because there's like only one tree, one solitary little tree in Shora, and it's in the backyard of this guy named Giannis, and nobody's going to get to that tree. So obviously the storks don't have any place to build their nest. And then all the roofs in Shora are pointed. So that's another big problem. They just don't have a place. The teacher moves on to Aoka, and Aoka says that he hadn't thought a whole lot about it, but he did think for just a minute because he had fallen into the ditch. He got super wet and he was wishing he had a tree to hang his clothes on. And he realized there were no trees. And he was like, oh, maybe that's why there's no storks here. The teacher is like pretty convinced that the number one reason there's no storks is because there's no trees. But Lena is very determined. She's like, yeah, that could be part of it. But really the big thing is that our roofs are so pointy, they can't do anything. They talk about how, you know, well, we could start planting trees, and they come up with this idea for planting trees. And that's a really good idea. So there had been this really salty water that had come in and really killed all their trees. So they could bring them back. They just hadn't had the soil for it. And nobody really had time to plant trees for many years for one reason or another. So they had this plan to do that. And that's fine. But Lena kept saying, well, but yes, we can do that. But that would take a really long time. So we have a faster solution. We just need to find a wheel. We can put it on the school and then the storks can build a nest on that. Then they decide that they need a visual for their goal. So their goal now is to find a wheel to put it on their school to bring storks. They need a visual. And so Lena runs to Grandmother Sybil III and asks if she can borrow her tin. So she grabs the tin and they put it up above the blackboard. And underneath that, the teacher writes, "Could it be?" And they begin just imagining, because the teacher gives them a little more context for the storks and where they're coming from. And he talks to them about how they actually come there from a big river deep in Africa. They're surrounded by rhinos and zebras and lions and giraffes. And they fly all the way to Holland during the summer to live there. And so
to me, that sounded like, at first when I was reading it, I was like, is that true? Or is he just like making this up?
I don't truly know. I guess we should look it up. I mean, you look at some of the migratory paths of birds and, yeah, and things like that, and they are pretty lengthy. So going from Africa, I mean, it could even be like Northern Africa to Holland. I don't know if that would be too big of a stretch. Anyway, just the last couple of things in this chapter, and we start to get to where the chapters are very, very long, and there's a lot to them. So the teacher says that they're going to go find this wheel, and he says, we're going to really work at it because that is how to start to make a dream come true. But he's trying to keep them engaged in their actual school. Like, and what a wonderful teacher too. That is another thing that I pulled from this, is just the fact that this teacher was willing to go down a rabbit hole to see where their passion was. Because how much are they learning from this? So much. And he was able to recognize that and go with that and turn it into a wonderful teaching and learning opportunity. But then he's also like, but we also do need to do arithmetic. This is a skill we've got to develop. As you can imagine, they could not focus on that very well, especially since stork season is there. So they really do need to get going on this goal if they're going to make it happen. So the teacher decides to give everybody an hour. So it's about 11 o'clock on Saturday. It sounds like they usually go till about 4 o'clock for school, but he's like, I'm going to give you from now until noon to just begin your search, you know, just go try. Because everybody's going, oh, we're going to have a wheel up on every roof in Shora. The teacher's like, let's be practical. Let's start with just one. Like, that's where we need to start. So everybody scatters. And we start with Yella, and he has spent the hour searching. He's ended up in the attic of his own house. And the only thing that he's been able to find is an old bow. And there's no arrows to even go with it. And one thing that I did want to point out is that the teacher had said that they should all look where a wheel could be and where it couldn't possibly be, because that's the best way to find things. So Yella had looked in his attic thinking there's no way, but the teacher had said to do that. So he didn't find it. He found a bow. That comes into the story later. And he looks down from his attic and he sees Auka coming up from the cellar of Grandmother Sybil III carrying a crock full of sauerkraut. And he's like, what are you doing? And Auka's like, well, I did ask Grandmother Sybil if I could look around. I asked her if I could look down in her cellar. And she's like, well, there's not going to be anything in there, but that is a good idea of your teacher to look where it even couldn't be. And I really don't like to go down there. So if you wouldn't mind just bringing up the sauerkraut while you're down there, that would be really great.
Yeah, she says, I don't like going down there. It's too hard for me. But I put the sauerkraut down there because it smells so bad. So I just leave that down there.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you want to bring it up, that'd be great.
And she was actually having him move it because the smell was coming through up through her cellar. So he was going to move it to her shed or something, which is really funny. And then Pierre and Dirk, they totally, as many little boys do and little girls, got distracted by a haymow. They just started sliding down the haymow, and that's how they spent their hour. They were sliding down the haymow and they thought, oh man, it's been an hour. We've done nothing. So they're like, well, we could just take some of his hay back with us and tell him that we thought it would be a good idea for the storks to be able to put in their nests. So it looks like we've done something. So they all gather. Lena hadn't found anything, and Aoka comes back with pushing a baby carriage. They're like, what is that for? He's like, well, these are the only wheels I could find. And I know they're not big enough, but here I am.
I found a wheel. There you go.
I did find a wheel. We had to start somewhere. So they're feeling very discouraged because there's like no sign of a wheel. But they look up and they see storks flying over there overhead. And they're like, oh man, the season has begun. They're coming. You know, we've got to hurry. They do go ahead and finish their school day. And then the teacher's like, okay, I'm going to be here for the all afternoon. So be sure to report to me when you finish your search. And he said, in spite of your disappointment in Shore this morning, the unexpected still always comes up to surprise us. Something that he keeps mentioning throughout is just how quiet Shore is. And so you also get the idea there's not a lot of mingling. Everybody's pretty quiet and just going about their days. And also, I mean, it is a fishing village, so a lot of the fishermen are gone. There's farmers out in their fields. You know, everybody's just kind of doing their thing. And it's just a very quiet village. And I think in some ways that could be peaceful, but too much of it. And it could be kind of hard, a little rough.
Especially like nobody's talking to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like going to bring them together.
Exactly.
He does talk about that a lot. Like they were walking through the village and it was silent and they hear everything because it's so silent.
So. It is so quiet. Yes. This part is really funny. So the teacher is in the schoolhouse and just a while later, he looks out and he's like, all right. So they had all kind of been assigned to a road and they were all pretty excited about it. Yella is one who had been a little bit more hesitant, maybe sort of made fun of it a little bit, but he was pretty passionate about it now. And the teacher was like, Yella's really got his heart in it now. And when Yella gets his heart into things, he's liable to hunt for a wheel into the next province. And that was really true because just a little while later, the teacher sees Yella coming down the road with a wheel. And he's like, oh my gosh, she found a wheel. But he looks again and he sees that Yella is being yanked along by the ear by a farmer who's like furious. So they walk into the school and the farmer's like, this kid stole this wheel from my yard. And we find out that Yella had been looking all around. He went to this farm and he saw this wheel like half buried by the barn. And he's like, he had looked around to see if there's somebody he could ask about it. Didn't see anybody. He's like, well, it doesn't look like they're actually using it. So I'll just go ahead and take it. But he had left a note. He had gotten a tile and written a whole note on it saying, we just need this wheel so that storks can build their nest on it, so that storks will come here to Shora. And then as soon as they're done with it, I'll bring it back to you. And he even signed his name. And so the teacher gets this whole report and he kind of has to stop himself from laughing. He's like trying to be cautious as he talks, but he's like, at least it isn't a downright thief who leaves a note and signs his name after he's taken something. And thieves hardly ever promise to return what they steal. So if we do teach them to steal at this school, you've got to admit we teach them to do it differently. You can see Yella meant to return it. And because the farmer had accused him of teaching the kids to steal. He keeps trying to sort of talk the farmer down because he's got such a hard hold on Yella's ear. So he's just trying to get through to him. The teacher's trying to get through to the farmer. Finally, the teacher says something that does strike a chord with the farmer. He's like, I'm sure there was a time when you were a boy, you seem like somebody who would be so determined to get something when you were a boy that you would do whatever it takes to get it. And the farmer is like, well, yes. He's like, my mother wouldn't let me have a bow and arrows when I was a little boy. Everybody else had them, but I didn't. And so I stole a knife from the kitchen and I made myself a bow and arrows. And I was so proud of it. He's like, my grandfather caught me when I was trying to return the knife and he basically beat his bottom. But he's like, but it didn't matter because I was so happy I had the bow and arrows. And the teacher's like, oh, well, there you go. So you understand. So again, just like that idea of relating to people. And we are all similar. We all, maybe we live in different time periods. Maybe our experiences aren't exactly the same, but they're all quite relatable in one way or another. And so the farmer gets to this point where he's like, well, he really can use the wheel. Like, I don't care, but there is a period of time during the year that I have to have it. Like I have to use it for hauling things on my farm. And it just happens to be this week. And the teacher talks to him and he's like, well, if Yella helped you, maybe you could get that work done earlier and then we could use the wheel. And the farmer's like, yeah, we could do that. And they also sort of come to this agreement that he would also teach Yella how to make arrows for that bow he found in his attic. So I also love how the author like ties everything together in very clever ways.
Yeah, like I noticed later, like in another chapter, can't remember who it is. It's not this chapter. It's a couple chapters later. I think it's Aelka sees Yella being drugged by the ear by the farmer. So like all these chapters are happening at the same time.
Right.
It's kind of, yeah, I always think of like, this is what happened in this, but they're all happening like, at the same time.
Chronological, but yes, they are all like in the exact same period. So yeah.
I just loved when he said like, well, you might have been a boy once, right? And it's funny, as a parent, I think that a lot. I'll think I'm frustrated with my kids, my adult children, right? But I totally remember being that age. And I was exactly the same way. But like now I'm an adult and I can see things clearer, but mostly because we have problems with Katie, who's 20, not wanting to like spend time with us. We had this big family trip last weekend and we were doing stuff in town as a family for 2 days. And I was like, we're going hiking. And she was like, I'm not going. And I'm like, I'm so frustrated with her as the mother, but at the same time, I can remember what it was like being 20 and not wanting to do anything with my family. It's just kind of funny. Like, you just have to remember how you felt when you were a child. And like,
it's so hard.
I mean, at her age, I was married. We have to treat, he's like, you got to treat her like she's an adult. I'm like, I know.
In some ways, that's got to be harder though, because you're like, I don't know. For me, I'd be like, how do I treat them and relate to them? Because relating to a single person is harder as they get older because their experience is very different than if they were married at 20. And that's not even to say that one is better than the other. It's just like, it's just different.
Love that like you do need to think about what it was like. Just him reminding him, he's like, oh yeah, I've done that before. I did that too. So, and cute that they like connected. He was going to help him on the farm and then the farmer was going to help him make arrows. So amazing.
So sweet. And you know, these are good kids and good adults. And that's why I think that these kinds of books are so good to read to our children. But I also think that adults should read them too, because it, you know, it's like our kids need adults who will be willing to relate to them this way.
I also like that they need to look where they expect it to be and where they don't expect it to be. And isn't that like the truth when you're looking for something?
Yes.
You like keep looking in the same spot that it should be. And it's always somewhere, if you don't find it, then it's somewhere you wouldn't expect it to be. So.
Yeah. And you can't explain why it's there. There's no reason for it to be in the unexpected place. But
so far in the book, everywhere they've found wheels are places that they shouldn't have been. I loved this chapter too. So
Pierre, oh my gosh, so
called
good.
Pierre and Dirk and the cherry tree. So Dirk and Pierre split up. Pierre has a man tell him that most likely nobody has a spare wheel in Shora. That would be like a man with no legs. Well, if you remember, Amity, I think, mentioned Yanis. He is legless Yanis. So he doesn't have any legs. So this makes him think about legless Yanis. Then we get the story that the children believe that he had had his legs bitten off by a shark, boots and all. So he's a fisherman. He had fallen into the water and a shark had bit off his legs, which I guess I believed at that point. But now I'm like, yeah, that doesn't make any sense. So this spins Pierre into thinking about being legless. And so he's sitting in a way where his legs fall asleep and so he can't feel them. So then Dirk shows up and he's like, what are you even doing? You're supposed to be looking for a wheel and you're just sitting here. You're sitting there. And then Pierre's like, well, I can't really explain it.
This is another one of those moments. I'm like, he knows kids and the way that their minds work. Like, I can totally remember having bizarre moments like this as a kid. And you're like, don't really want to tell anybody. You're like, that would seem really weird, but like all kids have it. They let their imagination run wild.
Yes, but it seemed totally normal to him at the time until he's like, I got to explain this. So they decide to go to I wonder how you say that. Turnad, maybe. It has two A's in it. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But they're hungry. So they decide that they need to go to town first to get something to eat. Then they will go down to this town. This is where they are looking outside of the town because they had already looked in the town. So now they're going out to look. Again, like you said, the town is silent until they hear this, a terrific banging and rattling and clatter of metal. and they know exactly what it is. It's legless Giannis protecting his cherry tree, which had been mentioned earlier that he protected this cherry tree, which is the only tree in Shora. And we find out later it's the only fruit in Shora, which sounds awful. And so he doesn't want anybody, any birds or any boys getting this fruit. So it says this, the cherries on Giannis's tree must be beginning to ripen and the birds were raiding it. But as in every other spring, Giannis was under the tree protecting his cherries. Yana, his wife, had to climb up in the cherry tree every spring, because remember, Giannis doesn't have legs, to hang a long rope with pieces of tin strung on it from the highest bough that would hold her weight. Giannis couldn't do that because he had no legs. From the first day the cherries began to turn, Giannis sat in the wheelchair under the tree to yank the rope and rattle the tin whenever a bird came. Now, this didn't work when the magpies came because they didn't care about the rattling. And so they were bold enough and clever enough to raid the tree and steal a cherry in spite of all the rattling. So for them and for boys, he had other measures. So his wife would gather stones. She would go to town to peddle her bread. And as she would walk, she would gather stones for him as his ammunition. And like I said, his tree is the only fruit in Shora. And I loved this sentence. At boy or bird, Giannis let fly. And through the years, his aim had become deadly. So there was a story about how Yella had gotten close once. Giannis had chased him with his wheelchair and Yella had like frozen. I think they used the word paralyzed. He'd become paralyzed. He didn't like to talk about it much, but what they did know was that Giannis had taken Yella and flung him over his legless stumps, and then he had gone to work. And all Yella would really say was, I wasn't scared paralyzed anymore when he got through with me. I just couldn't walk. That man's got the hardest hands, and he never said a word. That's a picture.
Yeah, and just like, what a different time, right? When it's like, it doesn't matter who the adult is, you just can assault a kid if you want to, like,
yeah, like that would never fly now.
No,
yeah. So Derek and Pierre decide that they need to look in Giannis's backyard, and so they come up with a plan. Derek is supposed to try to distract him while Pierre goes through the gate. So they execute this plan, and Pierre gets into the yard and sees Giannis aiming at Derek, and Derek's hand is over the fence. Giannis has a stone and is looking at him. And so Pierre yells, Dirk, drop. And then Giannis spins around to aim at Pierre. And he says, don't even try it. That gate is fixed so you can't open it from the inside. This reminded me of a haunted house. That's a little trap I fixed up so if a kid got in, he wouldn't get out without me putting my mark on him. Giannis accuses him of trying to trick him, which they were. And Pierre says, but we weren't going to rob you of your cherries. They were just looking for a wagon wheel, which, you know, to everybody they tell, it's like, why were you looking for a wagon wheel? Like, I don't
know. Yeah, understand. Seems very unbelievable.
Yes. Giannis realizes that they are the twins, and he tells him to call his brother over. And Pierre refuses. He's like, I'm not going to call him over here. You're going to hurt him. But then Giannis throws Pierre over. I'm so confused. He throws Pierre over his legs, over his lap, because there are no legs. And that's when Dirk runs through the gate yelling, wait, Giannis, I'm coming. And then with both of them in the backyard, they're able to explain the whole project and admit that they probably would have taken some of the cherries while they were at it. And he appreciates their honesty and believes them, because nobody could have cooked up a story like that. So basically, they find out that Giannis isn't as mean as everyone says, and that he really hadn't gotten bit by a shark, but by mosquitoes. So what had happened is he had had mosquitoes bite him. He'd scratched his legs too much and didn't go to the doctor. So he got an infection and they had to cut off his legs. Now, at the end of the chapter, it says they feel like Giannis had become their friend. So it just reminded me of like the story of a haunted house where an old person lives and like the kids are all scared of them and think it's haunted. And then it's not really. And the old person is nice once they get to know them.
Yeah, I totally like outlined a whole part where they were finding out the truth. And I just wrote Sandlot moment because, you know, so many people will be familiar with the movie Sandlot and the old man who's played by James Earl Jones and his huge dog Hercules in the backyard. And everybody believes it's like a child eating dog. And the old man is just like the worst and it would like feed kids to his dog. These are the stories they've made up to be able to tell each other around a campfire and to kind of like give each other that thrill and scare. They have no idea what he's even like. And when they finally get up the courage to just go knock on the door and talk to him, they find out he's this blind man who's just very sweet and nice. And the dog is really quite harmless. Yes, he likes to take the balls, but, and that's really the same thing here. They built up the story about the sharks eating his legs. They were very sure he was going to throw that rock at Dirk's face. And he's like, I was never going to throw the rock. And I would never throw a rock at a boy. He's like, hands and arms are too precious to me, and legs, you know, because I lost my legs. And he's like, I just wanted to scare him. I wanted his face to peek over and see me with my arm cocked. So he is still kind of a grumpy man. He's not like this sweet old man, but he wasn't going to like throw a rock at Dirk's face. And his legs did not get eaten off by sharks.
I just thought it was kind of funny. It kind of reminded me of Pollyanna and the man that's mean in Pollyanna. Yeah. And he ends up adopting that little boy and they have like the prisms. That's what I remember.
Yes. Yeah. Very good. It just needed somebody to.
Like they said, if I didn't have legs, I think I'd be mean too.
Yeah. They're like, we kind of get it. Like, but they also kind of told him, well, but having them eaten off by sharks is actually a cooler story.
Yeah. Mosquitoes.
Yeah. So, and he's like, is that what everybody believes? Like, yeah. And so we're going to see later, he kind of adopts that and it's hilarious. So.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, so I wanted to talk a little bit about the next chapter. And my husband and I had this discussion about when you read, do you visualize what's going on? Like, do you see a movie?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I do not. And really? He does not know how I read. He's like,
okay. And
so Sydney does see a movie. Mm-hmm. I don't. His mother doesn't. But David does. And I thought that was really interesting because I struggled with this chapter and I struggle with any kind of chapters where there's a lot of technical, I mean, I kind of get it, but like, I don't like to slow down enough to like figure out what they're actually talking about. You know, like when he's, we'll talk about this later, but when he's putting the stakes in and they're like talking about the ropes and how they're tying, I just, it bogs me down. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but that's really tough. Like, do you see it in pictures or you don't at all?
I mean, sort of. Like,
think about it.
I sort of see, like, he's like, well, what do you see when they're describing like how somebody looks? And I'm like, well, sometimes I try to imagine it, but sometimes not. I'm just, I don't see it. Anyways, so I just thought that was an interesting discussion. And yeah, him and Sydney were like, well, how do you even call yourself a reader? I don't know.
I'd say you're a hardcore reader because that sounds like it would be really, to me, that sounds really hard. Well, to like still get the story and like not see it.
This is what's interesting to me though. I can read hard things without getting like, there's certain people who can't read anything hard, like maybe child abuse or violence or whatever. It doesn't bother me because I'm not picturing it.
Interesting. Yeah, that's really.
But a movie, I cannot.
Sure. Yeah.
It's different because it's right there. But anyway, so my description of this chapter is very short because I had no idea what was what they were doing. But anyways, it's called Aelka and the Ancient Wheel. So he runs into a farmer who's watching him because he was doing some suspicious activity. And so this farmer had like hidden or run or something to a hayloft to watch him because he's kind of at the farm next to him, I think. And then while running over there, he trips over an ancient wheel buried in a hayloft. They kind of have this discussion about what are you doing? He's looking for a wheel. And the farmer's like, well, that's funny because I just tripped over one. There's one up there in this hayloft. And I mean, it's ancient. It's been there forever, but it's up there and you can keep it if you can get it down. But he's like, I don't think you can get it down because it's really heavy and you're a child and I would get some.
Well, and because the only way for it to come down would be to push it out through the big doors in the gable of the barn. There's like a trap door, but it's not nearly big enough for the wheel. So it's really just like straight down. And if he lets it drop, it's going to obviously break. And so it just.
And he's not heavy enough to like. Or strong enough to hold the rope, lower it down. Right. So he's like, you're going to need some help. Well, he should have listened. getting the wheel down is extremely dangerous. I mean, when you're reading all that about what's happening to him with the rope and the wheel, you picture that?
Yeah.
Okay, I think there might be something wrong with me. Or maybe I need to like...
No, it's just interesting. But everybody, I don't know, everybody has their thing that they just do differently. So I think that's kind of cool.
Maybe I'm just like, oh, this isn't important. I kind of get what's going on. And it doesn't really matter. Like, anyways. So, I mean, it just sounded like he, at one point he had the rope tied around his chest and like, it's just, he's not strong enough to lower the wheel down through like a bunch of unfortunate events. The wheel gets dropped and he lives. So he yes. survives this, which is good, but the wheel gets dropped to the ground and it said that it was in hundreds of pieces. Unfortunately, the wheel did not make it, but.
Yeah. And he did try to be smart about it because there was like a pillar in the middle, obviously a support beam or something. And so he did try to like take the rope all the way around that, you know, it's still tied to him, but he took the rope all the way around that to attempt to slow down the wheel. He just had no idea how extremely heavy the wheel was. So he goes around the pillar, he kicks the wheel off, and immediately he just falls to the ground and is yanked all the way around the pillar and then comes and he just about falls, you know, all the way off of the top of the barn, but he's able to hold on. And so the wheel just like swings like a pendulum for a while. He's holding on to, I mean, it's pulling on him and it's just swinging back and forth, but he's able to hold himself up. And this is important because later on, he realizes how much strength he has because of this moment.
Yeah. So you got a lot more out of it than I did. I was like, I don't know, something happened and the wheel fell.
Well, because eventually the rope is the thing that gave out because he's like, what am I going to do now? And it was kind of a blessing. The rope was very old too. So it gave out. So that's why the wheel crashed to the ground.
He ends up picking up all the spokes and tying them around. Well, he still has the rope around his waist. And so he's sliding the spokes into this wheel that's tightly tied around him, which is going to make it very hard for him to move.
Yes. It calls it like a corset. Yes.
Yes. So all the way around him, he has these spokes in this rope. And so he tries to roll the metal rim of the wagon wheel down the road. And it's really hard. It like keeps veering off and going into the ruts. And, you know, at some point it kind of jumps up. And then, well, he figures out it's easier if he keeps it in the rut. And then at one point it jumps up and drops down and then it breaks even more. It comes apart even more. And that's when it ends up down in the canal. And so then we have this whole section where Yella comes to help get the wheel out of the canal, but he ends up getting stuck down in the canal. So that's where I'm like, we're just going to skip all the parts. I mean, it sounds like they used the spokes as stakes to like hold on to. And then he's kind of like putting his feet into the water to feel for the wheel, but he never does feel it. Right.
Yeah. I think it's a lot deeper than they anticipated.
And they're trying to watch where it is in the water so they don't lose it. So it's like, okay, it went down there. Don't take your eyes off of that spot because that's where it is. But anyway, so Yella gets stuck down in the canal. And at first, Eolka thinks that he should probably go back to town to get help. And so he kind of starts to leave. And then he's like, I can't leave him down there. He's so scared. And so he decides he shouldn't leave him. Eventually he's able to pull him up out of the canal with the old rope. And they're worried about the rope because it had given out at the barn. At the ends of it are kind of falling apart, but he's like, but the whole thing should work. And so with the old rope, Eolka is able to pull him out and they're both surprised at his strength. And then Yella tells him, well, I guess you can play with us now because you're pretty strong.
I loved it because Eolka did have this moment where he was doubting himself. He was so scared. He didn't know what to do, but then he was like, but the rope held that really heavy wheel for a long time. And I held the heavy wheel for a long time, along with myself. I'm really strong, so I can do this. Yeah. And the rope can do this too. And wonderful realization that he had more strength than he ever realized before. And that's just true for everybody. We all have a lot more strength than we realize. And it's kind of in these emergency moments that it comes out. But then we need to remember those and then use it.
Yeah. I thought that was really cute though. So they have this bonding moment. So that we're not even just seeing like these children bonding with the older people, but they're also bonding with each other.
Absolutely. Gaining greater appreciation for each other and seeing each other's value. So, because before, I mean, they were kind of friends, but they were also sort of like, I'm going to say four distinct, of course, they're still distinct, but kind of four very separate little individuals, you know, not a lot of unity there. And I say four just because Pierre and Dirk are like joined at the hip, basically. And so it is, it's a really way of pulling them together. And it is important too, that they talk about how they're going to try to go and find somebody with a rake.
I like these last two chapters.
These last two chapters are so good. So now we get to Aouka. So I kind of love it because like, so each kid has their own chapter. And so this is Aouka's adventure. So he's heading to the village of Ness. And we may remember that Lena's aunt lives there and she sometimes has storks on her roof. So Aouka is determined he's going to look everywhere. He's going to go all the way to the village of Ness because he is going to find a wheel. On his way there, he hears like this tinkling in the bushes and he's like, oh, maybe that's Lena, because they had sort of started out together. It wasn't, it was the Tin Man. So he's sort of like your traveling salesman. He's got a wagon full of tin that he goes around to the different villages and sells things. He at first doesn't even see him because the Tin Man is behind his wagon, continually having to repair his wheel. One of the back wheels is falling apart. The rim is constantly trying to come off. And so he's making extremely slow progress because he would just like tie it together with wires. And of course, like the gravel of the road and things would like wear the wires off.
He'd have to stop like, it, jump, yeah. Get out, fix it, get back in.
Yes. So he's making very slow progress. He's trying to get back to Ness, which is where his family lives. And maybe it's Nace, I don't know. And so Aouka is like, so you can't really use that wheel anymore, right? And the guy's like, well, I'm going to probably have to make it do because I can't afford another wheel right now. And if I put it down in the canal, the water will make it swell and it'll do for a few days, you know. And Aouka, he's like, well, hey, how about I help you? How about I go back with you and I keep the wires on there and help you get all the way back to Ness? And then if I do that, could I have your wheel? And the guy's like, again, I can't like promise that, but if my wife has saved some money and we're able to buy another wheel, then yes, you can. So they make it very slowly back to Ness. And Aouka's, he kind of finds joy in this. He looks at it as sort of like a little competition with himself to see, you know, how quickly he can get the wires back on and get them twisted. And they get back into the village and they pull up to the man's house. Oh, and they get to where they've run out of wires. And so the Tin Man actually gives Aouka a hammer and is like, can you just hammer it back into place as it comes? And my heart just went out. We've had so many car issues like the past year and a half. I'm right there with you, pal. What you need is a completely new car, maybe a new wagon, new wheels, whatever. He obviously needs a new horse, but you can't afford it. And so you just keep hammering stuff back into place and like tying things together with the horse.
Duck tape.
Doing the best you can. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So they get to the Tin Man's house and there's this woman standing on the stoop of the house and she's got all these little children. She's holding a baby in her arms. And it's just, Aouka kind of feels sad. Like he sees it sort of like a hopeless situation. Like they're obviously very poor, always strapped for money. She hadn't been able to save any money because she's got like a million children to try to feed and take care of. And one of the little girls had to go to the doctor. And so they cannot afford another wheel. And so Aouka kind of takes off. So the Tin Man is like, thanks for helping. And I only wish I could give you the wheel. And Aouka says, oh, that's all right. It was sort of fun. But then he's like, in a way, it feels really bad for saying it like that because he's like, and your wheel is broken and this is your livelihood. Okay. He sees all these storks coming into town and he sees where they're nesting on this specific roof. And so he's so drawn in by it that he finds himself looking up right directly under this roof. And this lady looks out of her window. She's like, what are you doing? Do you just walk into people's yards? And he realizes he kind of laughs a little bit because he's like, oh, I guess I did just walk into your yard, because it would require him like, oh, lifting the latch on her gate. He says, you see, there were the storks so close. And in short, we don't have storks at all. And you have them on your roof. She's very sweet then. She's like, well, if you've never had a stork in your village, I suppose it's exciting. So we find out that this lady is actually Lena's aunt. And she draws his attention to her neighbor, Everett, who is struggling to get this wheel up on his roof. And she's so funny. She's like, he never has storks. He's always so determined, but he like always does just the wrong thing. And I try to tell him, he doesn't listen because he's super stubborn. And she's like, and can you even believe what he's done? Like this year he's painted his wheel. She's like, storks don't like the bright colors of the paint. So this neighbor, Everett, he calls over to Auka and he's like, hey, I'll pay you some money to help me get this up on the roof. And Auka's like, well, I would have done it anyway. So 2.5 cents, that's great. So he goes to help him. And then he's something like, what a waste of time, dude. And Everett is like, what are you talking about? He says, the storks aren't going to come to your wheel. He's like, you painted it and they're not going to like that. But then he says, but I know where you can get a wheel that will be just perfect. Basically, he's able to take this brand new, beautiful wheel. Yes, it's painted funny colors, but it's a very nice wheel. And he takes it to the Tin Man and gives it to him. So he has a brand new wheel for his wagon. And he says, hey, we just need to give your old wheel to Everett and then you're good to go. And the Tin Man and his whole family are so happy, so grateful. And they go over and they don't really give Everett a chance to say no. They know that he desperately wants storks on his roof. So it really is what he wants as well. And so they help and put the old wheel up there and everything is good. I love it so much because Auka does not end up with a wheel. He doesn't, but he sees a need and he figures out very cleverly how to meet both needs.
I had to look back and see if he was the smart one, but he's not. He's just the regular one.
He's just the regular one. And just regular kids can do awesome things.
Yeah, it was great. Did. I thought it was so, anyway, I was like, oh, I see what he's doing here. Yeah. What a smart kid.
Yep.
And at first I was like, is he lying? Like, is it true that the storks won't come because the wheel is painted too brightly? It must be, but yeah.
Well, I mean, I think he goes off of what Lena's aunt says. Yeah, and Lena's aunt gets them every year. Like, she knows, you know, and Everett has never had them. He knows all this from Lena's aunt. Yeah.
And I loved at the end how they all piled onto the, I was so excited. It reminded me of getting a new car and like, everyone's so excited that you got a new car and it's like, let's all get in the car and go for a ride. You know, they're like, our car is running. We have a wheel. Yeah.
And it is really fun too, because it, at the very end of the chapter, it does kind of allude to the fact that these storks come and they probably are about to land on Everett's new wheel. So, old wheel, but the wheel is off. The last chapter we're going to talk about today is chapter 8. And so now we're on to Lena. Lena is walking along. She runs into a dog and she like sings her way out of that situation because dogs really concern her a lot. And then she comes to the dike and she just kind of, she talks about how she loves the dike because you can see all around you and nothing comes up on you in surprise. So she's sitting on the dike and she looks out into the canal and sees this upturned boat. In other words, overturned, I believe. And there was like a heron sitting on it. And she thinks in that moment, well, the teacher said to look where a wheel couldn't possibly be. And she said, it's been lying there as long as history. So she decides to go look. And because she notices that there's like this hole in the boat, she figures out how to climb on top of the boat, which is quite an undertaking. But she does that. She looks into this hole. And when her eyes adjust to the darkness, she sees a wheel. There's a wheel there underneath the boat. Of course, now she's like racking her brain trying to figure out how she's going to get it. But then she does her little celebration. She dances and sings, which she does frequently. All of a sudden, though, she hears somebody yelling at her from the dike. And also understand that, like, I need to learn a little bit more about these canals and how they work. The tides come in. Well, I guess this must not be the canal. This must be the ocean, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So the tide comes in, but right now it's very, very low tide. So she's able to just walk right out there through the sand. But she knows the tide is going to be coming in soon. Back there on the dike, she sees this old man. He's 93. His name is Dua. That's how I'm saying it. I don't know if that's totally right. He's 93, and every day he walks all the way to Trinad, which is quite a long walk. He always walks there and back, and he's yelling at her. And he's like, what are you doing on my boat? So she kind of explains to him, and he tells her that that boat has been there for 80 years and it is his boat. And she finds out that he knows that there's a wheel under there. That wheel had saved his dad's life, and so had he. So he tells her the story about how when he was just very young, his dad was a fisherman, as his father was before him. But he's like, my dad hated being a fisherman because he always got so seasick. But one time all the fishermen were out and there was this horrible storm and like the entire fleet of fishing boats was just destroyed. And my father's fishing boat came back in, but we knew that he was dead. And so we just like left it there. We were just, everybody in the village was so sad. And he said that he would often just go out and just look out and just be sad. And he's like, one day I was looking out and I swear I heard a tapping sound. And he's like, I knew that my dad was alive. And so he ran back to his house and he grabbed a saw and he told his mom, dad's alive, dad's alive. You know? And she's like, no, he's not. Like, you know, I know that you're really sad, but like, don't be delusional. So he goes back and he cuts a hole in the boat. And there's his dad, and his dad's alive, and he's able to reach down and pull his dad out and take him all the way. And his dad was so, so weak, but he's able to, I figure he was about 13-ish. So, but he was able to pull his dad out and take him back to his home. And he said, I walked in the door, my mom fainted because everybody thought he was dead. So, but the wheel came into it because his dad had always put a wheel on his fishing boats, thinking that that would help with his seasickness, because he was like, well, what is more tied to land than a wagon wheel? And so he'd put that in his boat. Well, so when his boat sort of like crashed and turned over and things like that, he was able to stand on the hub of the wheel so that the tide would not drown him. He was able to keep his head above water. He ate candles and he drank the juices of crabs and oysters and things. And that's how he's it. Obviously,
candles?
Can you imagine eating wax? I mean, I guess we do every time we eat like a bad chocolate.
I never thought of it as a food.
No, but I guess, you know, there you go. You can eat wax. So that was his story. Lena and Dua go back to his home to get that same saw that he'd used to pull his dad out, because they were going to make the hole bigger so they could pull the wheel out. So go get the saw. And he's like, you know, we're not going to be able to pull the wheel out by ourselves, so we should probably try to find other people. Again, the village is just deadly quiet and everybody's gone. Even the teacher's gone. And he'd said he would be there. So this is the funny part.
This chapter is so long.
It's really, really long. I know. I know. It's like, oh, holy cow. So Lena runs back to Dua. And Dua can tell there's nobody coming. But he does see Yana in the distance. Okay. Just as a reminder, Yana is Yanis's wife, and she goes around to the different villages selling her bread. She's coming back into town. So Dua makes this whole show of sort of like falling down the dike, because he's like, all the women in town like baby me. If they see me falling down, if Yana sees me falling down, she's going to go get all the other women, and then we'll have all the help we need to get the wheel out. So Yana sees that and she starts running back to the village and goes and gets his granddaughter that he lives with. Yana runs into the village and tells Yanka, Dua's granddaughter, who takes care of him. And she gathers all the women in the village. They're like, okay, we've got to go help Dua. And they're like, there's not a single man in Shora, not even the teacher. And you're Yanis, Yana. And she's like, what? Why isn't he here? Like, he never leaves his cherry tree. And the lady says, yes, he left his yard and cherry tree, left Shora with a rake, went with the teacher and four boys pushing him in the wheelchair. So it must have been all four boys that they were able to gather. And Yana wouldn't believe it for a moment. Not my Yanis. Boys pushing him? Ha! Huh, not my Yanis. And so the lady says, well, make me out a liar then. But I saw him. Why, I even called after him. Yanis, what's wrong? What happened? Do you know what he yelled at me over his shoulder as he flew by? Nothing, woman, nothing's wrong. But I haven't had so much fun since that shark bit off my legs. So he's like, I'm going with it. We're just going to say that the shark bit off my legs. Okay. So one of the women that they're able to grab is Lena's mother, Elena. And so all the women go to the dike and they're able to look down. They start yelling at him, come back, because now Dua and Lena have made their way to the boat. They're on top of it. Lena has been lowered down into the bottom so that she can dig the wheel out. She's going to tie the rope around it. And then that's how they're going to pull the the wheel out. Dua has made the hole much larger so they can pull the wheel out. And then he's like, hey, you're going to have to climb up because the tide's coming in and there's a big storm. And now all these women are here. She's like, I can't climb the rope. I'm wearing a dress. He's like, just take your dress off. I'm not going to look. And you can put it back on before your mom sees. And so she gets up the rope. But by this time, the tide is really coming in. It's there. And so it's a little concerning. But Dua tells him, hey, we really need a farmer with his wagon and horse so that we can get back to you safely. At the time, I don't think he tells them that it's really so that they can pull the wheel out. But that's his whole ploy. He's like, this is going to work. This is going to work. And he's like, this is fine. Guess what? The boat is high enough that we have a full hour before the tide is, you know, too high. So we're just going to sit here. Lena's mom and Dua's granddaughter are totally having a freak out, but we leave them there. They are sitting on the top of the boat. Lena is sitting with Dua with her hand in his, and he's just telling her it's going to be fine. And she's like, okay, it's going to be fine.
So fun. I loved this chapter. I feel like the last two chapters is what I'm like, okay, I'm in it. I'm enjoying this book. It's great. To me, it's just the really technical stuff that I have trouble with. So like, I understood what was going on here. Just so everybody knows that I do understand what I'm reading.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
They did say that the boat was going to be totally covered in water once the tide came in. So
But they had some time before that was going to happen. They were still in a bit of a hurry, but all the other women went to go find the wagon and the horse and things.
I also like that he's like, but there's a storm coming, and Lena's like, there is? Like, it looks great. Like, it's sunny. What are you talking about? And he's like, no, there's a storm coming.
He knows.
He probably feels it in his bones.
I know. Absolutely, he does.
He's 93. Just what a cute old man. And what a story. Yep. Like, his dad had been dead for 60 years. It's a long time. Yep.
Very. And so it kind of like helped him remember that. And
the other funny thing I thought was how they all grabbed, they all grabbed brooms for some, what was the reason?
Oh, well, all the women in their houses were very curious about what Yana was saying and doing. And so a lot of them just grabbed their brooms and walked out on the porch to look like they were busy sweeping the porch to find out what was actually going on. And then it says they were very relieved when she actually did want everybody to come around. They were like, oh, we're all included.
It just kind of reminded me of like witches. They grab their brooms. Everybody out.
Get your broom.
Yeah. Aww. We get the idea that they're not very friendly with each other. And so, I don't know. It's just great that they're all like going together to help each other.
Yeah. Yeah, it gives them something to work together on and for.
So yeah, are you reading anything good? We haven't talked for 2 weeks. So
I know. So I have a couple I could share, but I think I'll just do one and then I'll save the other for another time if I'm needing something. So I read The Island of the Sea Women as per your recommendation. It was incredible. It really was. I have to admit, like, it took me just a minute to really get into it to where I cared a lot about it. But then I really did. And I loved it. It was beautiful. And it was history that I did not know about. Like, I was telling my kids, because they were like, oh, why are you reading that one or something? And I was like, I like all kinds of history. I don't feel like we have as many books about Asian history, definitely not Korean history of any kind. At least I don't know of very many. It was wonderful.
Yeah, that book has a scene in it I will never forget.
Oh, there's a few. Like, are you talking about the elementary school one?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
I will never forget that ever.
Yeah.
I would love to read it again because now all of a sudden when you were talking, I was like, okay, it's coming back to me.
Yeah.
It's so good. That was one of my favorite books of all time, I think.
Yeah, it was just so well written. Lisa C. she's just next level. And I need to read more of hers. I know I've asked you before, but I can't remember. Have you read Snowflower and the Secret Fan?
I haven't. I need to.
That one is pretty incredible too. It is one that you just go, there was a point that I had to put it down because I physically could not. And maybe that is where it would be a gift to not be envisioning. Although she writes in such a way that you don't just envision, you like feel it.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you'd escape, but.
So good. But like if this is not a Carlina book. Carlina, do not pick up this book.
Okay.
If you're sensitive.
Especially when you're pregnant.
Do not pick it up. If you're pregnant, do not pick it up. But yeah, if you can handle reading hard things, it's so good. Yeah. So interesting and so amazing. Those women are just amazing.
They are. Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was so interesting. They were doing like these scientific studies on their bodies. They're like, we don't know how you do this.
Yeah.
They wanted to figure it out.
How do they dive in that cold water? And oh,
yeah.
So good.
And handle it.
Oh, the book I'm reading this week. It's The Secret Book of Flora Lee by Patty Callahan Henry.
Oh.
I will read anything that woman writes. She is so good. So this book is about two girls that during World War II, it's like called the Pied Piper. What do you call that? Where they ship the kids off. They evacuate them and they go live with these other families to keep them safe from the war. Yeah. I think they're like 6 and 8. And the 8-year-old makes up these beautiful stories called about a place called Whisperwood. And it's this magical place. And she tells it to her 6-year-old sister so that to comfort her and stuff. Well, the 6-year-old sister, the older girl believes she went to look for Whisperwood, but she disappears. And so it's years and years and years down the road. This lady is interested in like manuscripts and books and rare books. She finds a manuscript about Whisperwood. And she's like, nobody knew about that except my sister. Did she live?
So, oh my gosh.
So good.
Wow. That's cool. That's
and her really writing, cool. Patty Callahan Henry's writing is beautiful. I mean,
okay,
just,
so has she become Patty Callahan Henry, or is this the same Patty Callahan that wrote?
It's the same lady. Okay. I think maybe she got married.
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay. But, you know, we read
Mrs. Lewis.
Becoming Mrs. Lewis and The Wardrobe. What was it called?
Once Upon a Wardrobe.
Yes.
Yeah.
So beautiful. Just her writing. Anyways, yeah. I will read. I think I'm going to go read everything she's written because it's delightful.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Anyways.
Just like a quick side note, it's interesting because I told you I read that book, The Body Keeps the Score, and he was talking about how that whole program, they're like, oh, we're going to get the children out, you know, to save them. They actually had worse PTSD than the kids who ended up staying with their families.
It was a horrible
that interesting
program.
I think it was probably well-intentioned,
yeah,
but turned out to be very destructive for the kids, which I thought was really interesting.
Yes. And there's a couple of books about that. Kids books seem to take it into a better, it's like, not quite so. And this book is actually quite wonderful. Like it's not depressing. And anyways, I think she has a really good way of writing. And I would highly recommend it.
Awesome.
Anyways, so next week we'll finish The Wheel on the School. We'll do chapters 9 through 15. And then we're going to on to Frankenstein.
That'll
be fun, maybe. Scary.
Yeah, I think that is one that I've never read before, so I'm excited.
I was telling my mom and she's like, oh, I want to read that. And my husband's read it. So anyways, that should be good. We're so happy you joined us for this episode. We hope you will join us next week as we discuss The Wheel on the School by Minder de Jong, chapters 9 through 15. If you have suggestions for books we should read and discuss, please email us at thebestbookspodcast@gmail.com. We would love it if you would leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts and share our podcast with your friends. We want to inspire and encourage as many people as we can to read out of the best books.
As Thoreau says, read the best books first, or you may not have the chance to read them at all. See you next week.